take a trip, take a trip. Spread some good vibes.
Rastaman vibration.
We got to take a trip, take a trip. Take a trip.
It's all about repatriation.
If we take a trip up to Africa, I know you will feel no pain. Got to take a trip, take a trip. Take a trip now.
My brothers and sisters,
got to take a trip.
Oh yeah.
Take a trip
out of Babylon.
Got to take a trip.
When we talk climate change, the things that we are seeing that are already changing in terms of weather patterns, we don't have rains when we expected rain, temperatures are higher, and this all this is happening because of global warming. The whole atmosphere of the earth is warming up.
It may be a global phenomenon, but its effect is most urgently felt here in the world's poorest continent. Africa is already 0.5 degrees Celsius warmer than it was a century ago, the report says, and the mercury is still rising. The report's authors say the continent is undergoing extreme environmental changes. Drought-prone areas are getting drier, and drought is afflicting more of the continent than ever. Paradoxically, wet areas are simultaneously getting wetter, with torrential downpours destroying crops and arable land.
Africa is both uniquely vulnerable to climate change, it's experiencing above average temperature rises, and is likely to see more of those over the coming century. And the parts of the land vulnerable to extreme drought will get more.
There is also a phenomenon known as flipping. Every 10 years or so, in an arc from central to northeast Africa, wet areas suddenly become dry, while dry areas become wet. The report calls for two major changes of policy by countries in the developed world. The first is to reduce carbon emissions, ultimately by up to 90%. The UK's production of greenhouse gases, the report says, is still rising. Second, it wants a much bigger provision of financial assistance to the affected areas of Africa to help under-resourced governments take the kind of action that will help their populations cope. This, the report estimates, will cost the developed world between $10 and $40 billion a year. Growing climate chaos, the report says, argues for action on a global scale, but in particular by the rich industrialized world. For Africa's misfortune is that it is the continent which contributes least to global warming, but suffers first and most acutely. Alan Little, BBC News.
Farming is my life, is my culture. It has a very big impression, or it impresses a big history in my life. It brings the family together. So if one separates me from farming, is like a person has already killed me and buried me in the ground. I'm a proud farmer and I've liked it, and I want to remain a farmer. I want to go on farming till I go to rest into the grave.
And how does global warming affect you as a farmer?
This one has affected me, as I've already said. In the absence of water, you can't farm. So the yields have gone down. My financial status has also been tempered with. So at one time, my granddaughter was asking me to say, "Grand, when are we going to have the green maize?" I said, "We'll only have it when we have rain water." "But where is it?" I said, "I don't know. It is somewhere stuck in heaven."
Chimamoya,
global warming is set to make many of the problems which Africa
Africa already deals with much, much worse. In the last year alone, 25 million people in sub-Saharan Africa have faced a food crisis. Global warming means that many dry areas are going to get drier and wet areas are going to get wetter. They're going to be caught between the devil of drought and the deep blue sea of floods.
Now, of course, while you say the problem's going to affect them greatly, they're not particularly bad when it comes to producing greenhouse gases, are they?
The great tragedy is that Africa as a continent has played virtually no role whatsoever in creating the problem of global warming. That's been the result of the economic activity in the rich industrialized countries. So now we've got kind of two choices. The rich countries are under a huge obligation to cut their greenhouse gas emissions. But even in the UK, which is claiming global leadership on this problem, our emissions are rising. The other thing that we could do is help with meaningful financial assistance so that Africa can help adapt to the global warming, which is going to happen anyway. But at the last count, the two special pots of money that were set up to help the continent had only one-tenth of the amount of money originally pledged in them.
The problems faced by Africa have been put on the map, haven't they, in recent years? But what you're saying is initiatives like cancelling debt really are not what they need. What they need is firstly for us to cut our emissions of greenhouse gases and also for us to help them deal with the effects of global warming.
One of the great potential tragedies is that over the last 10 or 15 years, a huge amount of effort has gone into getting a better trade deal for Africa, to writing off many of its debts, to dealing with problems of disease. But with global warming blindsided, all those best efforts could come to nothing. You've got some very poor, vulnerable countries like Niger, which has been incredibly hardly hit by drought, and aid to Niger has plummeted. You've got things so bad in some areas, like in northwest Kenya, that the local people give the droughts names. The one they've just been going through has been dubbed the one that divided homes because it forced so many people to go and seek their livelihoods elsewhere. And they've been in almost continuous drought since 1999, when they had a drought which was called It Has Swept Away Everything, Even Animals. So unless we tackle the problem of climate change and get the resources in place and the climate-proof, climate-friendly policies in place to help the continent develop, then you're not going to see the end of poverty. You're going to see things getting much worse.
Some of those consequences are seen in Darfur. You write about how the crisis in Darfur is connected directly to climate change. What do you mean by that?
From the Canadian program The Current, April 7th, 2006, available from www.cbc.ca/thecurrent. Tim Flannery, author of The Weathermakers.
Well, you know, when I was a kid growing up in Australia, the crisis had already started then in the 70s, and it was inevitably portrayed as a crisis that was brought about by land mismanagement, that these ignorant and primitive people, was sort of the general impression you got, you know, had overgrazed their land and caused a changing climate that was now having a negative impact on them. Mm. In fact, that is not true at any level. What we see now with the recent science that's been done very rigorously to try to understand what's caused the decrease in rainfall is that it's occurring because of increased sea surface temperatures in the Indian Ocean. That accounts for about half of the rainfall decrease. The other half is caused by particulate pollution over Europe. So, you know, it's that comforting message that this was somehow a problem caused by these people, brought on them by themselves, by their own actions, is simply not true. It's been misrepresented.
I'll be with you to the end. Let go, we have seen the impact of climate change, especially to start with, it is the government had all the plans disrupted, because the government would plan for government development programs, and then these will have to stop because the government will have instead to feed the people and use the money that was set aside for educational programs, for health programs, water, instead it will be used for feeding people. But also at the grassroots level, where the people are, it is felt even more, because there you find that people go without water because most of their water is dried up. There has been no rain for maybe several years. And then not just water, but food shortage. People have to go and search for food. Actually, sometimes people just go in the wild and try to find fruit in the bush to eat, because they cannot find food anywhere. Not just that, but you find that there is also migration, that people move from one place to another, not because of war, but because of starvation, in search of food. And sometimes not all families move. Sometimes children are left at home, and these children go to school, so they stop going to school. So there is school attendance dropout because kids cannot go to school and they are starving. Diseases as well, because there is dirty water and people cannot boil their water. They just use it as it is. This brings more diseases as well, and trachoma and things like that. Deaths also under fives because of malnutrition, that also happens. People rely on agriculture and they want to get food from the farming. If they don't get food from farming and there's no rain in the area and they can't grow things in the area, they have to move, they have to migrate and find places where they can find food or places where they can grow food.
Who is to be blamed for this nature problem?
The Western countries, for example, they are the most industrialized countries. They are the ones, I think, to blame. Because with all the carbon dioxide, you know, the emissions, they're not cutting out. So this all brings, I think, effect on the climate. Without dealing with the causes of climate change won't help poverty, because poverty may be being bred from climate change as well. So they must deal with that as well if they are to fight poverty.
So if one separates me from farming, is like a person has already killed me and buried me in the ground.
In this Africa update from www.ecoshock.org, you have heard from the BBC, CBC, and Voices from Africa on radioafrica.oneworld.net. Music slices from Toots and the Maytals tribute album, The Moses Choir on the Rough Guide to South African Gospel, Matalini and the Motahela Queens, Baba Mal's I Will Follow You, and finishing out with Lucky Dubé's House of Exile.
in the